Hello, everybody, and welcome to Limited Playtime, the board game podcast where we bring you board game reviews in 30 minutes or less.
Or the next episode is free.
I am Kyle Bolin.
And I'm Jason Cavallari.
Today, we have two games that we wish to talk about because we suspect we may not have more than 15 minutes worth to say about 15 minutes worth of things to say about either of them, because they're just a little bit on the smaller side in terms of game length and weight and rules and all of that. So today we are talking about Rattus, a game that is about the Black Plague and basically spreading or avoiding rats and then continuing to try to repopulate Europe. And then we'll also be talking about King Domino, which is a game about building a kingdom around your little cardboard castle using what looks like, you know, domino-styled pieces where there's one type of landscape on one side and another on another. But we'll get there. This is weird, talking about two games at once.
Yeah, board game overload.
Yeah, I don't know. My brain's like all twisted now. I'm like trying to run two paths at the same time. But anyway,
I mean, to Rattus, be fair, your brain is kind of twisted anyway.
That is true. Rattus, though. Rattus is a game that is set in, what is it, the 1300s in Europe?
Yes. Well, the Black Death that they're referring to runs from roughly 1348 to 1350.
Yeah, I think when I went back and reread the rule book to try to refresh my memory, because now it's been a while since we played this game. But I think it listed a very specific year in the rule book for what the game was supposed to emulate. It was like 1347 or something like that.
Yeah. Sort of depends on where you're talking about, too, because it entered Europe through the port cities, largely in places like Italy and Spain, and then made its way mm-hmm. through the rest of Europe. So it took a while.
Cool.
That PhD is good for something.
Yeah, no. I guess maybe this is a question for the end of the podcast, but I'll ask it now. Was this a game that you own because of the historical relevance of the Black Plague and the fact that this game is themed around that?
Pretty much, yeah. You know, I like history things, and I like particularly macabre history things, so. This seems kind of thematically, at least, up my alley, and then I did some reading about it to find out it's actually pretty, you know, quick, and I think it's a fun game.
Yeah, I guess we can just jump right into it. It is a game where...
This is a game.
This is a game.
It's like those Pert Hapley things from Parks and Rec. This is a game where we play.
This is a game where you see a map of Europe, and there are a bunch of different countries in the map, and each one of those countries may have a certain number of cubes that match the color that you have picked. So blue, yellow, those are colors. I don't remember which ones are in the game, but you pick a color at the beginning. Those are your cubes, and those cubes represent your population, and you are going to be placing those cubes around Europe throughout the game, and you will also be simultaneously, or, you know, within the same turn, placing a certain number of little round rat tokens. So on one side it shows a rat, and on the other side it's got some numbers and some symbology.
The ultimate point of the game is, like, when the game ends, you want to be the one that has the most surviving population left on the board.
Mm, yep.
And effectively what happens throughout the course of the game is, you know, you put more and more of your population cubes down in different areas. And at the same time, you try and strategically place some of the rat tokens in various areas. And once, I think it's called the plague piece, you move the plague piece at the end of your turn, and whatever zone the plague piece ends up in, you flip over the tiles, the rat tokens in that region. And then you remove population cubes according to the various numbers and symbols that are on the tokens that you reveal.
Yeah, it's sort of randomized. The backs of the rat tokens are all different. So it'll have like basically like it lists a number first. Yep. And if the total number of cubes within that country are equal to or more than the number listed, then you resolve the loss of population based on the symbology below.
Yep.
So it'll tell you like if you've got a witch, then you are going to lose a population. If you've got, you know, a merchant, then you lose a population. And so each one of those types of roles is associated with a card that you can also take during your turn. And we were kind of talking about this before we actually started recording, and I believe that when we played, we were only taking one card at a time. There are six roles in the game that kind of give you like an extra action you can take or kind of modify the actions that you can take, such as like the number of population pieces you can put down or the number of, you know, like being able to move the
plague piece.
The plague piece, two spaces instead of one, things like that, like little modifications. And there's six of those to choose from. You can choose one of them on your turn. The way we were playing, though, I believe we were putting our previous card back and replacing it with another card if we took it. In the rules, it states that you actually just keep the cards. And the only way to lose a card is if another player takes it from you, because you can take a card from anybody's tableau in front of them. You just can't put cards back. And you can always choose to, on your turn, also just not take a card. Because when you take a card, it basically exposes you to the possibility of losing population if the plague pieces that you flip. Exactly. So yep. It's increasing the number of symbols that match you when you flip those tokens. Mm-hmm. So if you had zero cards in front of you at some point during the game, the only reason you would ever lose any tokens if you're in an area that gets flipped is if you happen to have like the majority of the population in the zone and majority comes up as a symbol.
Yeah, it's either majority or all.
Yeah, majority or all. So yeah. there's a couple that are like agnostic to whatever roles you have, but otherwise it's all going to be related to whatever roles you have in front of you, and that is what dictates who loses cubes when the total population equals or exceeds the number on the little rat.
Yes.
Yes.
And there's the strategy here comes from. I think not only where, you know, choosing where you want to place your little peasant tokens or whatever, your population tokens, but also
your babies.
In determining, yeah, your babies.
I'm going to send all my babies to Italy today. I'm going to send all my babies to Romania tomorrow.
My babies.
Yeah.
So there's that element of it, you know, where you want to put these things, but also, you know, where you want to try and place the rat tokens, because the more rat tokens there are in a region, the more possibilities there are that when it gets resolved, you know, people are going to lose tokens from that region. And also where you want to, you know, ultimately end up moving the plague piece, you whether want mm-hmm. to move it closer or farther away from a region in which you have a large population in order to discourage other players from putting it there. Or if you want to just try and screw over your closest competitor or whatever. So mm-hmm. there's a couple of different layers of strategy and gameplay here that are involved.
It seemed like when we were playing the game, one of the predominant strategies we were taking was that we were all just following each other and putting lots of population in the same zones as everybody else, which made the game interesting because that meant that the rat tokens were resolving commonly and often. And I feel like about halfway through the game, we all started, or at least Brian and I think, started taking the token that allowed you, or the roll that allowed you to just place an extra cube. And so we were just like piling cubes on the board as fast as we could, hoping that like outpaced the attrition of the Black Plague.
Yeah, no, it's true. The game that we played is probably, you know, I've played this game a few times. The game that we played, this is probably the only time that I've ever actually seen that. It's probably the time that I've seen the most cubes on the board at one point.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Most of the time when I play this game, the main strategy for a lot of people tends to be to basically take the king roll mm-hmm. card, which allows you to place a population token in the castle area, which is immune to plague. So
mm-hmm. I saw you and Brian doing that early on, and I thought, I wonder how valuable that is, because I mean you're just basically protecting one cube at a time, which I guess could give you a little edge at the end of the game, but it kind of seemed like if you got lucky, right, like on some of those tokens, yeah. you could just start piling up the cubes elsewhere and probably, I don't know, like maybe like spread out a little bit more than using that role. So I think that was one of the reasons I started using that. And then I think Brian and I were just trading it back and forth for a little while.
Yeah, that ends up happening a lot. Yeah. And it's, using the king is also a little problematic because you can only put a population cube in the castle if you take it from a region in which there are no rat tokens. Mm. So its usefulness is a little bit limited. Usually only if, you know, maybe the region that just got resolved and all the rat tokens got removed from it because they got resolved and then you have still people left in there, mm-hmm. then the king can be kind of useful.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I think the way that we played it the most recently is probably the way it's more, I guess, intended to go.
Just piling people, piling those babies into Europe and hoping the rats don't bite them.
Yeah, population explosion, right?
Yeah. Just like the real Black Death, yeah.
Actually, the Black Death killed about 2/3 of Europe.
Yeah, I know. That's why it's a joke.
Yeah, if 2/3 of an entire continent of people is a joke to you.
Uh-huh. Now it is. It's been long enough.
Too soon?
Too soon. 1347? These people that are still very sensitive about their ancestors that died in the Black Death of 1347. You know, one thing we forgot at the top of the show, oh gosh, this two game show is messing my brain up. We forgot to mention the publisher and the designer. So the game is published by White Goblin Games and is designed by Henrik Berg and Osa. That's what we decided, Osa. Berg. With artist Alexandra Roche? Alexandra? So anyway, we like to hand that information out. But anyway, that's basically how the game works in a nutshell. There's not a whole lot to it mechanically. Like Jason's saying, like, there is a strategy to it. There is sort of like a monitoring what your opponents are doing, where they're at, trying to, sort of interfere with their ability to continue to propagate by, you know, moving the plague piece to the lands where they have a lot of people and trying to take care of some of those cubes. Pretty simplistic, right? I mean, like, the rule book is like 5 pages.
Yeah, it's not a terribly complicated game, but I mean, just despite the lack of complexity in the rules and the mechanics involved, I think it's actually a pretty fun game, especially if you're trying to play it the way that we played it, which was, you know, we had maybe 40 minutes before we were supposed to eat lunch or something.
Yep.
And it was a game that we could squeeze in that was, you know, kind of fun to play.
Yeah, we were specifically looking in your collection for something that could be played in under an hour. And fun games do not necessarily need to be complicated games, and this is one of those. Because, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a fun game. It is fun for what it is, which is a fairly simple, you know, like, medium-weight strategy game that plays pretty quickly. So if there's something like that that you're looking for, if you don't always want to play a 2.5-hour game, if you don't always want to play a game that requires you to, you know, burn your brain out thinking about the strategy, then this might fit the bill.
I think it's also a good game to get out with company that maybe is not, you know, really into board games. They might be a little intimidated because it's, you know, trying to sell it to somebody as, hey, it's a game about the Black Death is not, turning people's cranks a whole lot, but
I think I could make it work.
You could make the Black Death sexy.
I'm gonna make it work for me. Yeah.
Okay.
It's time to reclaim that Black Death. Make it ours.
But I mean, once you sort of explained it a little bit, and the game is actually kind of cute despite the kind of macabre theme.
There's little rats all over your Europe.
Yeah, I mean, there's little rat tokens, and, you know, there's, like, one of the characters you can use is the witch, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not terribly historically accurate.
Yeah. When I was thinking about, like, how I would summarize my opinion about this game, it's basically just, like, it's a fun little game that I think would be a decent purchase at the right price, you know? That being said, I looked up to see what it's going for right now, the price. I couldn't tell what the MSRP is, but it was listed, I think, as 30 on Miniature Market, and it was listed as, like,
wow,
70
really?
On Amazon or something. Like, it looked like sort of like out-of-print prices.
I was going to say, is it out of print?
Must be, right? $30 probably is, like, the high end of what I'd consider paying for something of this weight, complexity, and component.
I feel like when I bought it was maybe 25.
That seems right. Yeah. I would happily pay $25 for this game if I was looking for a game of this weight and sort of like playing time in my collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of quick playing games that are easy to learn mm-hmm. how to play mm-hmm. and are relatively inexpensive, maybe we should talk about
segue.
King Domino.
King Domino. Yeah. So King Domino is a very colorful kingdom building game, very happy looking game. You start out with a and a what?
Who designed it?
Oh jeez. See, I'm staring at my waveform. I'm not staring at
you're
the...
forgetting to give the props to the proper people.
King Domino it is published by Blue Orange Games. It is a Bruno Cathala designed game with art by Cyril Bouquet, which that
Cyril Bouquet
sounds like Anjar's alias.
Or his like drag queen name.
Anjar is becoming more human. I am now Cyril Bouquet.
Now welcome to the stage.
It just looked for like the first name it could find on the internet, and it happened to hit like an Archer webpage or something like that.
Right.
And then it just randomly came across Bouquet somehow too. Anyway, King Domino is a very small game. Yep. Physically, the box is little.
Yeah, but it's tiny.
Yeah, it's cool. You could like throw it in a backpack and take it on a picnic if you wanted to.
I frequently do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the perfect weight size and playing time to do something like that, to play it on a lunch or something like mm-hmm. that. Because we played it, I think it listed it as 15 minutes, and that's pretty accurate. Like, we played two or three games, I think, back-to-back, and I think we were only playing for like 30, 40 minutes or so. So that's very accurate.
Yeah, I mean, it's short enough, and it's easy enough to learn how to play in a few minutes. It makes it easy to fit multiple sessions in.
Yeah.
Even so, with first-time players.
So there's a bunch of tiles. They're two-sided tiles. Not two-sided. Double-ended, I guess, is the way to say it. Like a domino. A domino. You got a domino is split down the middle, and then it's got, like, you know, one number on one side and another number on the other. Or like a club cracker, if you will. And so what happens is you shuffle those dominoes up. They get stuck in a pile, and then you draw out five at a time. And on one side...
five or four?
Four. So on one face it has a number, and on the other face it has the terrain. And so you make a column with the lowest number at the top of the column and the highest number at the bottom, and you know, you order them in that order, and then you flip them over and you take turns placing a king meeple on the terrain that you want to take. In a turn order that is determined initially by, I don't remember. Do you remember?
I think it's random.
That's right. You put all the king meeples in somebody's hand, and then you draw them out randomly and that's what determines initial order. And then after that, you go in the order. The order is determined by the order in which you claimed and placed pieces the previous turn.
So whoever chose like the lowest numbered piece in the previous round gets to go first the next time.
Yeah,
and that's mostly because the higher numbered pieces are usually more valuable than the lower numbered ones.
Right, so it's balanced.
Yep.
It's a balance mechanic. We like those. And so you're basically trying to match... It's just like dominoes. You're trying to match, like, you know, my beach or whatever. What is it? They've got, like, ocean spaces.
There's, like, oceans, fields, forests, you know, a couple of swamps.
Cave.
A couple other things.
It's like a cave thing supposed to represent mining, you know. So you match those the side of it to another piece that has the same type of terrain on it. And you are trying to make basically a 5x5 grid around your castle. It can't be any bigger than that in any direction. So you can basically have like, you know, two full widths of a domino, or like, what would it be? It'd be like one full width of a domino on either side of your castle, all the way around, basically, right?
Yeah.
To create a 5x5 grid. And you're trying to create basically like contiguous orthogonal pieces of land that also have these crowns printed on them. And the way that you score the game is that like for every crown... in a contiguous area like that matches, you multiply that by the number of squares in the contiguous area, and you score that many points, and then you just add up all of those contiguous areas once they've been multiplied by the number of crowns contained within them.
Yeah, and if a contiguous area has no crowns, you don't score any points for it.
Right, and if you ever pull a domino or have to pull a domino that you cannot place because it doesn't match a legal placement area, meaning that it doesn't match the terrain and also stay within that 5x5. Yeah. It has to stay within that 5x5 grid. Then it basically just gets thrown out and your kingdom is then incomplete. And that's kind of a big penalty, because you only have so much space here and every little piece really counts.
Yeah. Yeah, and so once all the dominoes run out, you tally up the score, and whoever has the biggest score is the winner.
Yep, that's it.
Yep. I forget how many rounds it lasts, but it comes with something like 50 dominoes, and depending on the number of players, you take out a certain number of them before you start playing.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it doesn't, as you said, it doesn't last very long. It's only about 15 minutes. You know, I think for the simplicity of the game and for the length of the game, I actually think it's kind of I don't want to say it's not complex, but it gives you some interesting problems to solve in terms of trying to create the perfect 5x5 grid, and also in making choices about which dominoes you want to be able to get.
Yeah, there is some satisfying, meaningful light strategy to carry out within this game. It really reminded me of playing Carcassonne.
Similar
sort of way of thinking, right? Like trying to put together contiguous areas of land and finding out ways to try to capitalize on those contiguous areas as best you can. I mean, obviously there's like little differences in the gritty details, but that was the feeling I got out of it. And that's a good feeling. You know, Carcassonne is clearly a good game. It is, you know, it's one of the classics now. So I feel like that's a good thing. And this game feels like it's easier to learn than that, because Carcassonne has some of the rules in Carcassonne for scoring can be pretty strange or obtuse for newcomers. This feels like something you could teach to somebody in like under 5 minutes, maybe under a couple minutes, and get to playing. You know, like it doesn't seem that complicated, but I think that it was still a very satisfying game to play. It was fun. You know, like another game that at this weight, at the price that it goes for, which is pretty cheap, and the physical size that it is, it feels like it fits a place in a gaming collection that I know I don't have a ton of games that are like that. You know, I've got Catan dice, stuff like that I just like can throw in a backpack and take with me. I take those on vacation sometimes, you know, just to kill 15 minutes when we're waiting to leave the hotel room. This is that kind of game. And I feel like it fits that space extremely well.
Yeah. I feel like when you were here, we played it sort of like late at night.
Yeah. When we were kind of burned out.
Right. But we were like, oh, we don't want to go to bed yet, cause we want to play some more games, but we don't want to play something really heavy. So I was like, oh, well, let's play King Domino. And, and I think it fit well for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that absolutely.
Particular niche. And like I said, you know, I've brought it to tons of places, since I got it, cause it's a really, as I said, it was a very portable game. But also just, you know, sort of quick, fun, and easy to teach.
Yep. Yep. You should bring it to Gen Con. You can throw it in your carry-on.
Yeah. And I should say, although, you know, I'm really kind of sometimes a sucker for, like, really well-made games, you know, it comes with, like, little cardboard castles that look kind of chintzy, but I actually think they're kind of charming.
They're not chintzy. That's pretty thick cardboard, if I remember correctly.
No, I know. Like, but, I mean, as opposed to having, like, a little, like, plastic castle or even, like, a wooden castle, like, to go with your meeple or something.
I found them charming. And
so, yeah, me too.
Yeah, I liked it. So I like that game. I think it's cool. I would purchase it if it crossed my mind and I was in the mood for something light and fast like that. I think it deserves a place in a collection. So I like it. Approved.
We should have like a stamp sound.
I think that the different opinions that we have at the end of these podcasts have been kind of different in terms. There's no standard, so it might be a stamp this week. Next week, it's like, you know, a cash register sound. The week after that, we're using scores. Who knows?
You heard it here first, listeners. Limited playtime has no standards.
That's right. Okay.
All right.
Next week we're moving up on our 10th episode, so our next recording is going to be our 10th episode. And because we live in a society that is obsessed with base 10 and operates on base 10, that's special.
Except so when you need decided, to measure things.
So we've decided that we want to do something different with our 10th episodes. And since this is the first one, what we're going to do is we're going to do top 10 lists on our 10. So we're going to have 10s on the 10s, or top 10s on the 10s. And Jason and I kind of discussed what we should do a top 10 of. And we decided to just go ahead and do our top 10 board games of all time today. meaning that our opinions on board games obviously shift a little bit in terms of what we like and what we're playing and what, you know, our favorites are, just based on like new releases and, you know, like temporal distance between times that we've played things, nostalgia, stuff like that. But as of right now, what would we say our top 10s of all time are? We want to get that out there. We thought it'd be fun to do. And I think that it gives listeners a little bit of a baseline for where our individual tastes are. That way, when you're listening to us complain about a board game or rave about a board game, you'll have a little bit better idea as to whether or not your tastes align with mine or Jason or neither of ours. So that's kind of where we're starting with that. And we will be doing that next week. Now, Jason, do you want to drop the get a hold of us info?
Drop the
that we always forget.
Give the digits.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you're interested in getting in contact with us, you can do that through multiple ways. We have our email address, which is lptthepodcast@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us at Limited Playtime, or you can check us out on our website, which is limitedplaytime.com, and that will route you to theamazer.com, which is where we're currently being hosted.
There's an amazing comic book podcast on there. All 7 episodes. I highly recommend it. Those people, they were onto something there. That's a joke.
Yeah, it's like gone before its time.
Thanks. Okay. So that's going to be it for this week. We will talk to you next week when we do our top 10 on the 10s. And I think we also discussed we might indulge ourselves a little bit and give ourselves an extra 10 minutes for the episode as well. So we're going to break with protocol on that one because we think it's going to take us a little bit more time than usual to talk about 20 games, even if we do it extremely briefly. So that's the deal.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for listening, right, Everybody. We'll see you in 1 week.
All right. Later.
Bye.